Hi, everybody, and welcome once again to the show. We are starting right off with the dynamic, not just the beat reporter for the Cleveland Browns, but multi-talented journalist with 92.3 The Fan, Daryl Ryder. Daryl, you're heading into season 16. Come on, you just started like a week ago, didn't you?
It feels like a week ago, going all the way back to 97 when I started with you and Rizzy and Shrades and Tommy Thompson and Tommy Bruno over at Channel 8. But yeah, it time certainly flies when you're having fun. And 16th year where the Browns are my primary responsibility. I still do guards and calves, but
yeah, people have to understand that you can cover any sport. You're that talented, but your big beat's the Browns.
Yeah, the Browns are usually the priority, and then once their season's over, I migrate over to the back end of the Cavaliers, and then when they're done in the playoffs, then I move over to Guardians and work them up until, basically my summer vacation kicks in, which is right now. And then, training camp's about to be upon us. But, yeah, the Browns are obviously number one. They're the ones that move the needle the most, here in Cleveland. Fans are obviously very, very passionate. But you know what? Guardians fans are just as passionate. Cavaliers fans are just as passionate. But, I enjoy it because it keeps me fresh, too. Sure. Where it's not just football 24/7, 365. There was a period a few years ago where that's what it was. I didn't do as much Cavs or as much Guardians, sure. Or then they were the Indians. But now it's, being able to do all three teams and getting to be around all three organizations and in my mind mentally compare and contrast how they operate and things like that. Yeah, it keeps me sharper.
It really does. And of course, you mentioned our past. You were an intern at Fox 8 25 years ago. I can still remember the night that they traded for Sean Kemp. But beyond that, or before that, Daryl, you grew up in Warren, went to Warren JFK. Was journalism something, or radio / being on the air, being a media guy, that was that in your wheelhouse as a kid, or what?
I actually fell into it by accident. I will admit, and if my parents listen to this podcast, they'll roll their eyes and laugh at me, but I didn't exactly apply myself in high school all that much. I had a lot of issues as a kid, so I was kind of, even my high school years, just trying to, figure myself out.
Okay.
And so I graduated high school. Went to the local Kent branch because I just wasn't sure what I wanted to do with my life. And so one of the things I did in high school was I did the PA for basketball, for the basketball team. And I did it like it was like, remember the old, Howie Chizik, right?
Yeah.
I tried.
Mark Price for three.
Yes. So I tried to do like the Howie Chizik of Warren JFK hoops, right?
Why not?
So, and I had like the Chicago Bulls intro theme music going for the starting lineups and everything.
Yeah, you had the multimedia thing going big then.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was like going to an NBA game. And so the local radio play-by-play game guy, his name is Eric Boland, Northeast Ohio native, John Carroll alum, Yankee beat writer for Newsday in New York City. He comes up to me after one of the games and says, "Hey, I'm Eric Boland. I work for WRO, AM 1440, and you do a real nice job with the PA and all that. Have you ever been interested in maybe like doing radio?" And I'm like, "Well, I'll be honest with you, Eric. I don't know what I'm interested in at this point, but yeah, sure, sounds like fun, whatever." And so I ended up going home, telling my parents, "Hey, I think I'm gonna do some radio." I had a guy come up to me. It works for the radio station, and they just look at me like, "You ain't gonna make it." It ain't happening. So I, went to the broadcasting school. That's how I ended up interning with you guys. I interned with Bruce Rennan at WTAM when he hosted on the weekends there. And then I also interned with Eric at RRO in Warren.
In Warren, yeah.
And ended up getting hired when I graduated from there. And I just kind of fell into it. So anyone that is dismayed or disappointed that I'm in, blame Eric Boland, because he's the one who's like, "Hey, you want to do some radio? Think that's something you'd be interested in?" I'm like, "I ain't got nothing else going on, so sure, why not?"
So Daryl, when you were with us, then we also had power to delete your career as well. could Could Rizzy have put a kibosh on your future endeavors, or could I have, or Tommy Bruno, or Schrades, or somebody?
And I'm pretty sure that I gave you guys all the reasons in the world to end my career.
No, you were fine. You were, you know, first of all, when I remember all the great interns I've had over the years, the one quality was you always thought, you thought for us, and you didn't sit there and say, what do you need me to do? You were thinking like a pro as a non-pro, and I always respect the young people that come in with that kind of an attitude, and I saw there's a future for this guy because he's very proactive in his thinking and not just like, okay, what are we doing now? And so, you know, we could see that, and then the night that they traded for Sean Kemp,
it was,
that was a crazy night.
It was you and me in the newsroom.
The two of us. I can still recall. We were in a frenzy.
I basically produced the sportscast that night. I think we can say that 27 years down the road. I don't think anyone's going to get fired over that now. They might have gotten fired for that back then. I was running around the newsroom trying to figure out what I was supposed to do, what you needed me to do. That was a wild and crazy night. That was the ultimate, like, getting thrown into the fire.
Yeah, you're in the business now.
And that was my welcome to broadcasting moment. And somehow you guys invited me back the next day. I don't know how that happened, but the funny thing is after I graduated, I got offered a part-time production assistant job at Channel 8. Now, hindsight being 2020, worst career decision I ever made was not taking that job. But again, I just, you know, was trying to figure out my life, my career, what do I want to do, and how do I want to go about doing it. Now, at the time, I was like 19 years old, so I knew nothing. I thought I knew a lot, but the reality is at that age, I honestly didn't know a lot about life. I certainly didn't know a lot about the profession. And so I passed that up so that I could really immerse myself in radio. And again, hindsight being 2020, awful career decision. I'm joking. So I ended up working with Eric at RRO, Art Greenberg, Phil Levine, their radio station, the old WHK guys came down to Warren, and they bought that station, basically built a mini WHK. And when I was there for about 18 months, and when I look back, I mean, that was like some of the best 18 months of my life. Sure. Looking back on it now, those were the good old days. I mean, Anthony Lima, who's our morning host on The Fan, he used to call in all the time.
Sports Boy Tony.
You know, Eric, who now was our sports director and high school play-by-play guy, he covers the New York Yankees now, and I try and see him every time he comes into town, if possible. Dan McDowell, who is one of our producers and on-air talents, he's middays on the ticket in Dallas for, God, I think the last 20, 22, 23 years.
Yeah, a neat little stable
down there. Nick Wilson, our afternoon guy with Dustin Fox, his dad's the one that gave me my first job. And I gave his dad like 8 reasons to end my career.
So his dad was in the business. I did not know that.
Yeah, okay. Big Jim Wilson, who passed away a few years ago, saved my career on multiple occasions, I should say. This little teeny tiny radio station in Warren, Ohio, back in and then I'm the run of the litter cover. Well, Joe Gabriel works for the Cavaliers, does their web, a lot of their web writing for them. He was one of our on-air people and utility guys and producers and that. So just this little teeny tiny radio station in Warren, Ohio, that produced all of us that have, you know, gone on to make careers for ourselves. And you look back on that, I mean, you could write a book about it. You can make a movie about it, and people, no way this ever happened, and it did. And you're looking back on it, I feel blessed that they saw something in me to stick with me as I was an immature 19, 20-year-old kid, you know, trying to find my way in this world, that they saw enough in me to believe in me and to coach me and to help me. And, you know, I ended up in Cleveland in 1998. And I didn't even send in an audition tape. Jeff Sack, a good friend and mentor of mine, did it unbeknownst to me, because he was pestering me to do it. And I was like, I just, I'm not good. Like, I yeah. can't, I'm not ready to.
He believed in you. You didn't believe in you just yet.
Yeah. And so I ended up getting hired part time, and that worked into a full time job. And I've kind of been here ever since.
Wow. And so we go from, you know, you just being an intern in 97, then getting into the business in 98. We go like 10 years later. Now you're starting a beat. You know, your job is to really know anything and everything that's going on with the Cleveland Browns back in 2008 when you began. Give me your impressions on how that first year went for you, and then how you've grown more comfortable and in the day-to-day nuances of covering a team that is so fervently followed.
Yeah, well, the first thing was is I never wanted to get blown up by anybody for asking a really dumb question. So I was very hesitant to ask a lot of questions. Romeo Crennel was the coach. By the way, Romeo, like...
Yeah, one of the best people.
The nicest guys you'll ever meet. Like, you know, Phil Savage, again, one of the nicest people...
Very true.
...you'll ever meet. But I was also, you know, I grew up reading the Tony Grossis and sure. the Mary Kay Cabots and the Tom Withers, of the world. You know, Terry Pluto and, you know, back then, you know, Bert Grafe when he was still doing it. Like, I grew up reading all those guys, and now I'm like in this room. So like the last thing I wanted to do was step on any of their toes and dip into their territory and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, you had reverence for what they had accomplished. And you wanted to fit in, but you also had your own professional instincts that you wanted to do the job to the best of your ability.
Yeah, and so it was, I really didn't get comfortable for, I'd say, probably the first 2 to 3 years.
Okay.
Just because, again, I wanted, it was one of those, one of the things I was taught kind of growing up and even in the business is, you know your role. You know, and so I knew I was the new kid on the block. I didn't want to make waves. I didn't want to upset anyone in the room. I certainly didn't want to do anything to upset the organization,
sure.
That much. So, I mean, and so that aspect of it was, tough for me to kind of cope with. But then the more I got to know the folks, you know, that covered the team that I grew up reading, and that the more relaxed I became and comfortable asking tough questions that need to be asked and things like that. But it's so much different now for somebody coming in than when I was kind of coming in.
Well, when you came in, obviously social media was not even on the landscape, I'm assuming. We're looking at 16 years ago, barely, maybe one or two of the Twitters or the Facebooks, maybe. I think Twitter came in here in 09. I'm guessing, but very early in you weren't dealing with all that. Nowadays, it dominates what you're trying to do on a day-to-day basis, moment-to-moment basis.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I first, you know, started back in the late 90s covering games, you know, my assignment was like the visiting clubhouse, and there were like 8 radio reporters in town. 8 just radio reporters, stringers, you know, for whether it was AP radio or ESPN radio or sporting news radio, yep. and the wire services and satellite services that would send audio down and stuff like that. And those jobs no longer exist. I mean, I'll be honest with you, JT, there are nights when I cover Guardians games,
yeah.
I'm the only radio reporter that's in the press box. Or there's only 2 of us in the press box now, because those jobs are just gone. The wire service jobs are gone. They're not needed anymore,
yeah.
because news just travels so fast because of social media. And the technology has changed so much. I mean, God, I used to, like, you struck gold when you found the live phone line in the press box so you could plug your tape recorder, which, by the way, used to be the size of a laptop,
yeah.
and it used to weigh 3 times is the heaviness of a laptop. And now it's, I do everything on my phone, and it's instantaneous. I can get an interview from the clubhouse. I can turn that around on my, as long as I have enough time between players and interviews.
Sure, sure.
I can get that back to my newsroom so that they can start getting that cut up to get it on the air. And if there's any newsworthy items, I can put in the email, hey, you want to look out for this here. This is, you know, we're or if there's maybe some unsavory language that the FCC does not allow us to air, I can say, edit this very carefully, and I, you know, we'll put that in bold letters. Hey, there's this word and this word and this word, and you got to clean that up. It's so immediate, and the way we do the job these days has changed. So, and it's been an evolution, not only for me personally and professionally, but especially like how you just go about doing the job on a day-to-day basis. So, I haven't been in the business long. But I've been in the business long, you know, when you think about it, 25 years, you know, 25, 26 years doesn't seem like a long time. But when you look at, I remember the first time when I came to Cleveland and they're like, you're going to edit your audio on a computer. And I'm like, I think I remember using a computer in high school. It's been a few years, and I got real nervous because like everything's done on computer. I played all my sound for my updates. I'd have to play the sound bites through the computers instead. My hand would be shaking on the mouse, you know, and I'm getting ready to click the right. Don't want to click the wrong card. It's amazing that the audio and the video communication technology has changed. The written, you know, technology has changed. Whether it's now we've got Threads that has come out. Yep. That is the new, I guess, rage, if you will. It's the new Twitter or whatever. Even to this day, I kind of in my mind, and it's one of the things that I really respected about you and marveled with you, is here's a guy who's been in the business as long as he's had and could easily say, I'm not doing that. I don't have to do that. I am John Telich, and you know, I don't need to concern myself with that. The way you just rolled with the punches and evolved and constantly were figuring out new and faster and better ways to do your job, that showed me as a professional, well, God, if John's doing, I have to do that, because we're all competing for ears, we're all competing for eyeballs, we're all competing for the clicks and the likes and things like that. That is something that too, you know your role and be willing to evolve.
Yeah.
Because if you don't evolve, you will get passed up.
Yeah. And I think there has been some refusal of some old school journalists to want to be involved in what was evolving. And my gosh, Daryl, if I took the attitude that I wouldn't evolve, then I'd still be shooting film and processing film and editing film. Obviously that gave way to videotape, which gave way to the internet, which gave way to digital, which, you know, here we are with all these. I'm holding a phone as I'm speaking to you outside of East 55th Marina, where we had a hamburger short while ago. What hasn't changed and has probably been amplified over the years is the amazing, fervent belief Browns fans have every year, every single year, that this is the year. Now, if we can come to the present time when it is 2023, they do have an outstanding quarterback who obviously has to really show promise for them to be a great team this year. But what's your sense as you head into, should I be singing John Denver, Take Me Home, Country Roads? Because you're going to West Virginia. You're going to West Virginia for about 8 days to cover the Browns when they begin their camp in Greenbrier. But the overall sense that you have from this Kevin Stefanski year four football team.
I just kind of feel like it's a put up or shut up year for everybody. This thing had been building for years and years and years, going all the way back to that mid 20, you know, that 2014, 15, 16, 17, 18 teardown that they did, right? And they gutted the roster. They paid a ton of money to lose and get picks and things like that. And you got some good players out of it. You got Nick Chubb, you got Myles Garrett out of that. But I feel like this is a make or break year for the organization, because it's not a situation where I look at this team and I'm like, my God, I look at the rest of the league and they don't have this and they don't have that. And they don't, like, I look at this roster now, JT, and I'm like, they pretty much have what they need. If they stay healthy, like they've got a strong offensive line. I think the receiving core has been upgraded. You finally have the quote-unquote franchise quarterback, and now it's incumbent upon Deshaun to start earning that $46 million a year and showing fans and repaying the Browns for their support of him as he went through his off-the-field situation last year. But if you're a Browns fan, you should be excited about this year. You really should. I don't know if they're going to win the division. God, they haven't won a division since 1989. I mean, they're like the Cleveland Indians of, you know, division title droughts here. But this is definitely a playoff caliber roster.
Yeah.
My criticism of them the last 2 years that they did not make the playoffs coming off that COVID year where they did. They won 11 games and they made me look really stupid. I didn't think they had a snowball's chance and you know what to beat the Steelers at Heinz Field. Crying out loud, they hadn't done it in generations.
And they beat the pants off.
They just went out and took them to the woodshed, which, you know, hey, I like barbecue sauce on my crow. That's fine. But the last 2 years, the 2 years that followed were just so disappointing.
Yeah.
Because the core of the team hadn't changed. And I felt like that there were leadership problems. I felt that there were organizational problems that impact things. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that the 1 year nobody was allowed around the football team was the best year they've had since being back.
Yeah, the no outside distractions, COVID, no fans, all that type of stuff.
Yeah, no people in the building. It's just strict football and all that kind of stuff. And I don't mean that as a criticism. It's the reality. Like I feel like if you limit your nonsense around your team, and I think that that's a big reason why Kevin Stefanski's taking them to West Virginia to start training camp this year, is to limit the nonsense around the team and make sure that he has their focus going into the camp in this year, because there's a lot on the line. His job's on the line, in my view. The people that I talk to won't say that to me. That's my opinion, but I think it's a well-based opinion that his job is on the line, because when I look at this roster, I look at the talent that they have. Again, it's not like years ago where you're like, the team just sucks. The roster's terrible. They don't have any talent. They have no building blocks. Josh Cribbs was the cornerstone. I love Josh Cribbs. Again, I'm not criticizing Josh. But let's be honest about it, JT. Him and Phil Dawson were the only reasons to watch Browns games for years and years.
Yeah.
Right. And because they did not have the talent. Their first Hall of Famer in the expansion era. I love Joe Thomas. He's a left tackle. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not a quarterback. It's not a running. It's not a guy that impacts the scoreboard. You know, salute and God bless. The Browns almost broke Joe. He has talked about it. You know, there's nothing fun about covering bad teams. I know fans like get this impression. Oh, Daryl hates the Browns and he just loves that the team is terrible and he can just. I don't. It's miserable going into those locker rooms because you got to ask the same questions over and over. Joe Hayden's a guy. I've joked with him because he got tired of hearing the questions from me. But
he knew them before they were coming.
The questions were the questions, though. You know what I'm saying? And it does wear on guys. And we do forget. And it is something that I think young people coming up in the business need to understand. In the hunt for all your likes and your clicks and all that kind of stuff, you need to respect that these are human beings that you're dealing with as well. They might be multimillionaires and in tax brackets that we'll never fathom, and they may be public personas and whatnot. They're human beings. They have families. They have backgrounds that maybe differ from ours, or maybe we share similar backgrounds or whatever. I do think that sometimes that gets lost, but at the core, it's about people.
Yeah.
And I think that if this coaching staff can finally maximize it, because that's been my criticism of Kevin Stefanski, is I don't feel like he has maximized the talent. Has there been adversity? Have there been challenges? Yeah, every team deals with that. Good God, look at the playoffs last year, right? So you're going to have that. But I think Terry Francona is one of the most underappreciated people in this town. You want to know why he's such a good manager? People skills. Yes, he is a baseball tactician. That man forgets more baseball in a day than I will ever know in my life. Yeah. And I respect and understand that. But he has people skills. He knows when to mess around with people and have fun. He knows when he's got to be the bad cop.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, I just, and that's, again, these are things that you learn over the years when you're around different teams and different organizations, and you see JB Bickerstaff is another people person. Mm-hmm. Everyone, you know, yeah, they got their clock clean against the Knicks or whatever, but they wouldn't have gotten there without JB. And you know what? He has earned the right to see this thing through. Now, if they get blown out in the first round this coming season, okay, I'll entertain. You got to make a coaching change there. You got to get the guy to get to the next level. But I think Kevin Stefanski has to prove that he's the guy that has those people skills, that can get the most and the best out of the talent that he has, bring these guys together. And again, this trip to West Virginia, I kind of feel like is a real, real big part of that strategy for him.
Going to be fun to see how, and you've had some feedback from being there at the OTAs and mini camps and stuff like that, the whole Jim Schwartz effect. What are you expecting on the defensive side of the ball with him being the primary leader of that unit?
I am expecting that the Spider-Man meme defense that we saw the last 2 years will be gone.
Yeah.
You are not going to have guys in the secondary pointing finger at each other after a blown coverage saying, no, that was you. No, that was, trying to figure out what went wrong. He is, I think, simplifying things. I think that man-to-man, win your battle type of a thing. Don't worry about what the other 10 guys are doing. Yeah. Or don't worry about whatever scenario is playing out. You just beat the guy and kick his butt that's in front of you. That's your job, especially in that front seven. Cornerback, same thing. Hey, you handle your receiver or your tight end, or if it's a running back coming out of the backfield, okay? You handle your assignment. You do your job, the other guy's going to do theirs, and we'll be fine. And I the sense that I get is that a lot of the defensive players are really excited about that. That with all due respect to Joe Woods, I think that a big part of the problem was there was paralysis by analysis on that defense, which led to a lot of breakdowns and coverages. And then obviously the entire linebacking core last year getting wiped out by injury was less than ideal. But I feel like that Jim Schwartz will, along with Bubba Ventrone, who they hired to take over special teams, I think that those two people will be the reason why Kevin Stefanski has a job a year from now.
It's a big way to say that a lot of it rests, first of all, everything rests on his shoulders. He's the head coach, but they have the ability as coaches and motivators and leaders to get more out of the units that didn't have as much gotten out of them in past years.
Yeah, and you can have all the X's and O's as a coach, and I can tell fans, I always laugh when fans, call coaches stupid or, they're not stupid.
No, they work hard. We all know that.
But if you can't connect with people, and again, that's why I said earlier about the people skills, and even in our jobs, connecting with fans, connecting with players, connecting with coaches, but you have to have those inherent people skills as a coach. You can know all the X's and O's in the world, but if you can't connect with those people to get them to want to go to battle with you, for lack of a better phraseology, you're not going to be very, very successful. The Browns have had a lot of really good X's and O's coaches come through here over the years, and a lot of them have not been successful. Part of it because the rosters haven't been very good, and then part of it, egos have gotten in the way, or internal conflicts have gotten in the way, or whatever. There just always seems to have been something to conspire against the current plan of attack to be good. And I kind of feel like all those excuses are gone right now.
Yeah.
You can't say that this team lacks talent because they don't lack talent. I think that they're one of the best rosters in the AFC. But talent only gets you so far. Again, we learned that the last 2 years. There's no guarantees.
Yeah.
I remember thinking after they lost to the Chiefs, not a big deal, not an opportunity loss, because they're going to be back next year. I remember after 2016 when the Cavaliers won and,
Yep.
our morning show's taking calls. So how many championships are we going to have between the Cavs, the Browns, and the then Indians, you know, now that, you know, the curse has been lifted, and the Indians are going to win a bunch of time, and the Browns are right there on the cusp, and the Cavs, little did everyone know, the Browns are blowing it all up, but, you know, having seen enough of those playoff runs over the years, whether I was covering baseball or basketball, like, I know how hard it is to win a championship, and that's why I really don't emphasize winning championships now, because it's brutally hard. I see the toll that it takes on players round and round. I see them on the floor in the locker room iced up, and they got a trainer stretching them and massaging and treatment and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It is incredibly hard, as we know here in Cleveland, because it just doesn't happen all that often. Thank God for the 2016 Cavs, but I feel like that if you are able to really connect with those guys, that they go, you know, give you that max effort, and they go that extra mile, and they will play hurt. That, you know, the injuries don't hurt as bad. You know, the old ad. Yep. So are you injured or you hurt? If you're injured, it means you tore something. If you're hurt, you're just sore.
Get out there.
Right. So, yeah, they just I feel like that this is going to be a good year for Browns fans. I do. I just – something in my gut tells me that this is going to be a good year. I'm hoping it's a good year. I'm not going to lie, because it'd be nice to, you know, enjoy that and go into a locker room where everyone's in a good mood after winning a game and stuff like that. But I look at what they did in the offseason, and it's really hard to argue with many of those moves.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah, that's why I just feel like this is a put up or shut up. Like, there's no talking to be done. There's no talking about going to the Super Bowl or anything like that. You don't need to do that.
Yeah.
Just go out there and do it.
Yeah.
Just get it done. That's all. That's where I'm kind of at in that. I mean, yeah, it's great. I can write a story. Hey, so-and-so says, you know, yeah, this just in. The 0-16 Browns thought they were going to compete for the Super Bowl, right? Little did they know they were not going to win another game beyond the preseason.
Yeah.
I think they went 4-0 that year in the preseason. Them and the Lions, both of those teams went 4-0 in the preseason and then proceeded to go 0-16 after that. But, yeah, every team, you know,
they
the Guardians,
yep,
right now, they're around 500 and trying to, like, hang in there. And they were a year ahead of their time, so all these expectations came, and we'll see if they have to trade Shane Bieber or not, which they probably will. But, you know, they're not World Series ready yet.
Yeah.
But they're going to probably, you know, these young kids are going to get more playoff experience, and that's good.
Yeah, it's really
so that when they become a World Series contender, they're not going to be overwhelmed by that either. So, yeah, it's I think it's a good time to be a Cleveland sports fan.
Yeah, I really think it is. You know, and as far as the Browns are concerned, it's the – in the back of the heads of many Browns fans over in the past several years has been that notion that you have such, you know, transcendent type talent in like a Nick Chubb or a Myles Garrett, and you're, quote, wasting their time here because you haven't got much out of them.
I said that.
You and fans have said
and written
that,
it.
And written it. And so I don't think we're going to get to that point this year. I think. Will they be in the Super Bowl? I think that's maybe a bit far-fetched. But I think you're going to be pleasantly, not necessarily surprised, but you're going to be able to react in a great way, I think, this year. I just have a sense that things are going to come together for me.
I think if you're a fan of a team, all you can ask for is a chance. Your team to be good, to be competitive, and ownership to give the resources to put the good team on the field, and that, which, you know, the Haslams, like I said, they spent a boatload of money to lose with the long-term vision of we're going to win.
Yeah.
By doing it. So they, and this West Virginia trip's just an example. I'm sure this is not cheap for the Cleveland Browns to do this, but it's whatever it takes to win. They want to win. Believe me, I can criticize the Haslams for a lot, and I have criticized them for a lot over the years. But the one thing I will never criticize them for is their desire to win. Same thing with the Cavaliers. You know, the Dolans want to win too with the Guardians. They really do.
Yeah.
But you can only work with what you got sometimes as well. And they do. And they, I get the frustration with them not spending as much money as fans want them to. But they're competitive every year. Since Terry Francona, they've had one losing season. I think they were like 80-82. Like, it wasn't like a bottom out. Like, last season was supposed to be close to the bottoming out. Like, they were all kids. Like, they were not supposed to win that division and make the playoffs and advance into the division series. They were not.
The entire sentiment of the population before Jose Ramirez came out and said, you know, he's signing the deal was, you got a bunch of babies and they're going to get slaughtered this year.
Yeah.
And they win 92, 93 games.
Yeah. So, if you're a fan, you just want a competitive team that has a chance, get in the tournament, and then let's enjoy the ride.
Right.
I think that, and I understand. I mean, I've lived here in Northeast Ohio for almost four decades plus. And I understand when you only had the one championship, you look at the Browns, you got to go back to 1964. You look at the Guardians, previously Indians, you got to go back to 1948. But look, the Indians, 95, 97, 2016, they played for championships. They've won 11 division titles. They've, I think, been in the playoffs since that ballpark opened, I want to say 13 or 14 times. Like, I don't understand the anger that I sense sometimes from baseball fans here. It's like, you got a very competitive group here. You've got a very competent organization. God, go back to Hank Peters. Hank Peters in 88 or 89, he's the last external GM that team has hired.
Went to John Hart, so on and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, think about that for a second. You got to go all the way back to the late 80s. That's organizational stability, which is what you want. The fact that you can just, he went on, got another job. We got another guy to come up, take the place, or we're going to promote from within, and he's moving up the food chain, so we're going to bring the next guy up. Like, that's incredibly difficult to do, especially in this modern environment. And to the Dolans' credit, they have been able to maintain that. That's not to say they haven't had bad years in the past, and I was tough on them during those bad years because there was times where I felt like they weren't trying to compete or they were stuck in a rut type of a thing. But I give them credit that since Tito has come here, that they have every year they're right there, they're in the thick of it. It's incredible. The Cavaliers, I was not sold on Kobe Altman's rebuild early on. I was watching that, I'm like, what the hell is this guy doing? Like, how do these pieces fit together? And now you look at what he's done, and it's like, all right, I'm an idiot. I get it now. Like, I totally see it. It took some time.
Just wasn't going to happen overnight or can't.
And then the Browns, when they blew it up, and you're like, all right, we know they're gutting the roster and it's starting from scratch and all that, but now you're counting on the GMs to do what multiple previous GMs before them have failed to do, and that is capitalize on the draft and find the right players in the draft. Unfortunately, Baker Mayfield did not work out here. Yes, he did win a playoff game. They won more games in a season with him as quarterback. But the reality is,
He's not here.
He did not get a second contract. So, but Myles Garrett has worked out. He's a Hall of Famer in the making. Nick Chubb has worked out. He's a Hall of Famer in the making. Joel Bitonio has worked out. He's a Hall of Famer in the making. You know what?
Yeah.
So when you look at Denzel Ward, when he is healthy, he is a premier player at his position. Another draft pick, right? So when you look at just how each of these three teams in town have built their organizations, it really kind of gets you thinking just different ways. You know, the Guardians do it with draft, develop, trade core players that are going to go get paid for assets in that, and then you finish off the development of those assets.
Yep.
And, the Cavaliers draft and develop and then make the key trades. The Donovan Mitchell trade was incredible. That was their big move. Everyone's waiting for them to make a move. That was the big move.
Yeah.
The Browns, Deshaun Watson was the big move. That was the move. That was the missing link.
It has to pay off.
The franchise quarterback. Yeah. So we'll see if that pays off. I think it will, because I think now that the things that he had to worry about, he doesn't have to worry about as much now. And everything is at a stage where he can hand that off to other folks to handle what's remaining on that.
Mm-hmm.
But the league oversight is pretty much done. As far as we know, he's going to be on the field week one at Cincinnati. He's allowed to play in that game, and he's going to be allowed to play all 17 games. But I think a lot is going to be on his shoulders as well. And it might seem unfair to put that on one guy's shoulders, but he's kind of the exception to the rule. It is kind of fair because a part of the baggage that he came to Cleveland with, number one, number two, the record contract that he got, and number three, what the Browns gave up as far as draft capital to bring him here. So you have three different things, all very independent. But I look at all three of those things and I put them together and say, yeah, I mean, it's on him to be a transcendent player now, because that's something the Browns have not had since, I don't even want to say Bernie, because as much as I love Bernie, I don't know that I consider him a transcendent player of his era. He was a good/great player in his era, but I don't know that he was transcendent. And for you to win in today's NFL, to win a Super Bowl or be in contention to win a Super Bowl, you have to be a transcendent player. You have to be a Patrick Mahomes. You have to be...
He's the prime example.
You have to be a Joe Burrow or a Josh Allen. Maybe even Herbert out in L.A. with the Chargers. Like, you have to be a transcendent player. And if you're not, if you don't have that, it's really, really hard.
Yeah. They've got the guy. He's just got to, come out and play, like, as you said, the transcendent... player, and I think a lot of people got enough of a taste of him having six difficult games, coming back from 700 days off and all that sort of stuff, where there's going to be a lot of skepticism, and it's up to him to go out and down there in West Virginia to start things off, and as the season goes on, to show people that he's got what it takes. Let's go to a couple more questions. Let's go to the division. You mentioned Burrow. Obviously, you didn't mention Lamar, but Lamar is in the mix there. These are two tremendous quarterbacks. And then you got the young kid in Pittsburgh. It always seems to set the tone for a lot of these teams, how well their QB plays.
Yeah, and the schedule this year is so weird because three of the first four games are against division opponents. The Browns will not face a division opponent between mid-November and the season finale when they finish against the Bengals, which is really bizarre. So they're going to have to, quote, win the division against everybody else type of a thing. I don't think that the Browns are going to win the division. I think they're a playoff team. And the reason I say they aren't going to win the division, or I don't think that they're going to win the division, is because they got to prove it. Like, I think, because I have in Pat, I'm like, I think they can win the division this year. And then they're where they are, third or fourth place. So until they get out of this third and fourth place position that they have been in for the longest time, it's real hard for me to sell the fans the expectation. Because if I say, hey, JT, I think the Browns are going to win the division this year, then guess what? Daryl thinks they're going to win the division there, and Daryl thinks they never win anything.
Yeah, and it's not your job to sit there and get on your cheerleading uniform.
Right.
Because, you're covering the team.
Yeah, so I think that... It is a three-team race, though. It's a three-team race between the Ravens, the Bengals, and the Browns. I think the Steelers will be in last place this year. But every time I want to bury them,
they
find a way. I think that the AFC North probably, if everyone's able to stay healthy, I think the AFC North is going to be the most competitive division in the NFL. I say that I think the Steelers finish in last place. Steelers are going to finish in last place, and they're going to be like 9-8. Like, I feel like this division is that good, and a big reason why are the quarterbacks that are in.
Sure, yeah, and you look in baseball this year, everybody in the American League East is just killing it for the most part, and then we all know the division that the Guardians are in. They've been fortunate to be in that division per se. So. Quarterbacks being the name of the game, what kind of an effect do you think Aaron Rodgers will have with the New York Jets?
I can't wait to watch Hard Knocks. I love the fact that that has been forced upon them. They don't want to do it. That makes it even better. I'm kind of rooting for that to be a flaming dumpster fire. I really am. The last time they got a washed up, and I'm not saying Aaron's washed up, but tongue-in-cheek,
right,
washed up Green Bay Packer quarterback, it was Brett Favre. By the way, remember the preseason game when Brett, he flew in on the private jet because there was the whole saga with him joining the Jets net, and he came in on, I remember we were doing a, the station I was working for at the time, we were doing a pregame show from the Muni lot, and we're all scouting the private plane that Aaron Rodgers, that Brett Favre was flying in to Burke Lakefront Airport. There's the police motorcade. Oh, they're good. You know, we're doing the play. Hey, he's guy. We think he's getting in the car. He's off the plane. He's getting in the car now. Here comes the motorcade. There it goes down to Marshall Road, heading over to the stadium.
We used to monitor planes quite a bit back in those days, back like Dan Gilbert flying.
All the tail numbers. That flight tracker. God bless flight tracker. But I don't know that the Jets are. I don't know that they're going to be as good as everyone's assuming they're going to be. Again, a splashy offseason for them. But yeah, I mean, I've covered a lot of splashy offseasons. I mean, here in Cleveland with the Browns. And I'm just not sold. Okay. I think that here's the other thing too. Like people forget when I think it was the Pat McAfee's where he made the announcement. Like when he's talking about, hey, I was 90% retired. Well, that got my attention. Like when you
did
say
he
that.
Did he go to that silent cave or whatever?
Like a blackout.
Blackout thing.
He came out of the cave and his grand epiphany was, hey, I want to go play for the New York Jets. The hell. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to watching that, what I assume will be a dumpster fire from afar. But they got a good young roster. Remember, you got your AFC Defensive Player of the Year. Your NFC, you got your Offensive and Defensive Players of the Year on that team. So I they're going to be an intriguing team to watch. But, yeah, I love the fact that they are being made to do Hard Knocks. They want nothing to do with it. And I can't wait to watch that disaster.
Well, I don't know if I want to end on a disaster, but it's probably fitting because we've covered a few disasters in the course of our careers, mine being for 1,000 decades, yours for 50,000. So, Daryl, it's always a pleasure to visit with you, and I've been following your work for all these years, so keep up the great work. Enjoy the ride. Enjoy the moment. I know it's a grind. I know the football beat is just a difficult job to do. You don't travel that much, but it's with you 365, 24/7. Hard to get away from it. I feel bad that I've monopolized some of your time today on your quote-unquote vacation before you go to West Virginia. But the pleasure was all mine, and I appreciate all the great work that you do and your hustle. And best wishes to my man.
Well, I appreciate you and the impact that you have had on my career. I realize that I have implemented very little of what you tried to teach me over the years, and I apologize for that. But the impact that you had on my career and a lot of the folks that you worked with at Fox 8, I'll forever be grateful for that. And so when you asked me if I do a pod with you, I was like, hell yeah, I'll do it. Well, no problem. So I appreciate you having me. It was fun kind of reliving some of the good old days. It's hard to believe the 90s were the good old days.
Yes, they were.
God, am I old? I'm old. Like, that's the funny thing. Like, I feel like I'm old now. I'm not. Like, I'm in my mid-40s, but I do feel like I'm old. Like, I can't be old. No.
Daryl, it's just a number, said the man who turned 70 about a month ago. Have a great one, buddy.
Appreciate you, JT.